It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
And welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. What is happening with these markets? How far can the dollar go? How high can it go? What will be the net result to all the other economies in the world? Good questions. Well, person you're about to hear from, Bob Hoy, you run Institutional Advisors, and you have been spot on about the dollar since I've been talking to you for the past 4 years.
Yeah, well, thanks on that one. The what found it, financial history. There's nothing new in financial history, but those who have not read financial history, there's always something new. It's sort of like having dementia. But at any rate, one of the things where there's always something new, and one of the things that jumps out at you when is you look at the history of the senior currency and the history of gold in that senior currency. Now, one of the best things I found years ago was to take and divide the senior currency by the consumer price index or the wholesale price index or the PPI. And then that really tells you the story, because when England was on the gold standard for a long time, 150 years or something like that, there was no change in the price of gold according to the conversion. But in real terms, there was terrific changes in the price of gold, and very interesting ones when you're in a financial bubble. The first financial bubble brewed out in 1720. The South Sea Company was a quasi-government company, and it started at the end of an era of inflation when the government was very broke, and they came up with a scheme that their quasi-government company, the South Sea Company, would redeem their paper at par when it was trading at a huge discount. And then they also had options out on the stock, so it all became a bubble. But what you have is that the real price of gold goes down in a financial mania. And then after the financial mania is over, when it's a true classic bubble, the real price of gold goes up. And it can go up for as long as it takes to contract all the credit out of the system. And it's typically these great contractions have been about 20 years. So 2007 had all the earmarks of a classic financial bubble, like 1929 or 1873 or any of the others right back to 1720, and the real price of gold did come down, and then it did go up. So the other part of that is that in each of the post-bubble contractions, or we could call them post-bubble deflations, the senior currency became chronically strong against most other currencies and most other commodities for most of the time. Because, Kerry, you get the 3 to 4 year business cycle in there, where you have a business expansion like the one up to 2007. You had pretty good commodity prices with that one. And actually, in 2008, you had the huge speculation in crude oil that was celebrated as peak crude, where the world was going to run out of petroleum. But the major contraction really came in after the speculative peak in gold and silver in 2011, and it's been coming down ever since. So we've played that one rather well, because I can't remember, but it was a couple of decades ago, we realized that as anybody knows, this in a bull market for precious metals, silver will outperform gold. And so what we've done is run a momentum thing on the silver-gold ratio. The momentum thing is the RSI, and we found that whenever it gets above 78, you're in speculative territory, and no matter how persuasive the story is, the action is showing speculation. Well, in 2011, that RSI got up to 92, and we knew that the only time it had ever been there was in January of 1980, when you had silver up to $50 and gold at $850, and mm-hmm. then you went through the long collapse on that. So our advice in June and July of 2011 was that the speculation had become highly dangerous, and that there would be a long bear market for the sector, and the thought that it wouldn't be as bad as what followed 1980. But you know, Carrie, every bear market in precious metals you're in is always the worst one in history. But I
sure
do think
feels
that
like
this
it.
One is the worst one in history. And so this silver-gold ratio did another rally in 2012, into September 2012. And that one then got up to 84. And I was at a Casey function event in Carlsbad, California, and that was my thesis, because that the RSI got up to 84, and I just said, hey, this is dangerous speculation. And at that point, the reason for the speculation was that the European Central Bank had announced it was at some time going to buy bonds, or it started, and then also Bernanke came out and said they were going to buy bonds. Well, then that one is a gold bug that said, oh boy, the dollar's going to go to zero and gold's going to go to 10,000. But the instruction on that one, and at the time, I must say, I had my doubts that the buying program on bonds would really drive bond prices up, but it did. So looking over one shoulder, you can say when the Fed and the European Bank started buying bonds, then one would have been better off to buy bonds, which was the case. So at any rate, we're now many years into this bear market. The last sell we got from the silver-gold ratio was in May this year, and that was just another up to momentum. I think it was about 75 or something, but we figured, hey, you know, in this kind of a market, that's probably enough to do it. So now what we're getting here more recently, Carrie, is that about 4 or 5 weeks ago, the commitment of traders numbers got pretty out of shape in the direction that says, hey, it would likely go down. And we did a couple of them, I think about 3 days apart, pointing out that these CO2 numbers were, well, let's call it dangerous. Didn't use it then, but it is. And now, here the other day, we look at the CO2 numbers, and they're getting in a better position. It's the lowest in whatever in a decade. So CO2 numbers gave a very strong sell 4 or 5 weeks ago, and now they're saying, hey, it's changing. So what would we look for in a change here for the price of gold is that the dollar index has become overbought and has given us what we call a sequential sell. So we're just waiting for a downtick in that. But for investors, Gary, we kind of look at and have done this since 2011, that don't try and make money out of gold, especially when you're in a post-bubble contraction, when the senior currency is likely to be firm to steady. What you want to, that's just trading the currency. What you want to do is watch for the investment side on the gold stock and for profitability to return. Now, this is being distorted all over the place because that decade-long bull market that went to 2011, you had major corporations doing a lot of aggressive things. Startup mines in hopeless with poor
no
metallurgy, poor geology, geographically up high mountains and in politically bad places. So we've seen the majors writing off a whole lot of that stuff. But when you look back on when gold was fixed in U.S. dollar terms, back at the $20.67 an ounce that prevailed for quite a long time, And you also consider the real price of gold. So in the 1929 boom, of course, things were going up. Price of oil was going up, which is represents the cost of mining. Price of wages were going up because the base metal mining was very good and they needed miners, that sort of stuff. So in 1929, Homestake, which was the premier producer then, their earnings went down. I think it was almost a loss. And the price of gold was $20 in and out. So if you then take that at the end of 1932, it wasn't until the first quarter of, March of 1933 when Roosevelt started fooling around with the price of gold. But to the end of 32, the real price of gold had gone up. So I remember it's about something like 130%. And Homestake stock had gone up by about 130% as well, which, you know, the 1931, 32 bear market was pretty grim for the big market. So but their earnings had gone up. And much the same held with the big, what became the big Canadian producer, Dome Mines, only the recovery in price was, percentage-wise, was greater. But you then, for example, if you had bought a Homestake, you could have bought it for $9. I think the low in the crash was 8 1/8 or something like that, but you could have bought it for $9 through 1931. And then when the real price became effective and the earnings went up for Homestake, the stock was performing. Then in 33, you had Roosevelt with the experiment in trying to raise the price of gold. They did it because they thought it would raise the price of agricultural products, but it didn't work. But at any rate, they reinforced what was going on anyways, which would have been a rise in the real price of gold. So then Homestake, which I said you could have accumulated it for a year or so at 9, went up to, I think the high was 64 in the mid-1930s. And the really interesting part was paying $4.50 a share of a dividend every year. So that was pretty good stuff. So this is where, in a post-bubble deflationary period, the gold can do well, but they do well because of internals. Their cost of mining is dropping. So let's take a look at crude oil. It dropped from 147 in 2008, or let's take it from the level 107 in June 2014. And it reflects the cost of energy. And sure, you might have a hydropower for a mine, but you still got the cost of blasting and all that sort of stuff. So it reflects power. And you've also got extremely depressed conditions in base metal mining. And I know that in 2011, there was tremendous shortage even of trying to get tires for the big earth moving equipment. And now there's no problem in that department. So the mining costs for all mining, of course, are way down. And what we look for here now is that gold's real price relative to the producer price index starts to go up. And then somehow later on that should show up in their operating margins. And then you've got an industry one can buy. As a matter of fact, in every post-bubble deflation, gold has been the premier industry, and mainly because the real price is down, the real costs of mining are down, and the real price of gold is up. So this is the best, I think, the best way to look at it, rather than, as some people are looking for, you know, a collapse in the U.S. dollar. And I can add a little bit about that one, is that since the Fed opened its doors in January 1914, the major policy effort has been that currency depreciation is good.
Yeah.
And it's been practiced nonstop ever since. And it's now down to such that a dollar of purchasing power in 1914 is now only 3 cents, which is an abomination. So anyways, you could become famous. I mean, through the 80s, you could become a famous analyst if all you had to do was say that gold was going to go to 5,000 or 10,000. And
yeah.
Of course, we've been in publishing through that period, and we decided not to become famous because in history, you could not find any rational means of saying that in the U.S., that in the senior currency, that gold would go to $10,000. What you do have is a pattern on each long post-bubble contraction. The real price of gold, let's say it can double. And that is what we're looking for, is the real price of gold to double, profit margins to go up correspondingly. And gold mining will become the premier industry, and it'll eventually get exciting again. It'll affect the whole of the spectrum. The seniors will move, middle and sized companies will move, and the exploration side will eventually be a lot of fun.
Yeah, if we survive, right?
Yeah.
If we live that long.
Yeah.
So, but the amount of production that's taking place in the mining industry, it's got to decline dramatically, right, Bob?
Oh, but it doesn't matter so much. Here's the fascinating thing on four of the post-bubble depressions, and in the senior currency terms, the real price of gold went up by 1.7 times, mm-hmm. for four times. It's amazing how the number worked out.
Yeah.
And in one post-bubble contraction, the one that went down into the 1840s, and the real price went up, with the California and all that sort of stuff, the annual global production of gold went up by a factor of five or six times. Mm-hmm. Then not another post-bubble depression, 1890s, where the price of gold went up by 1.7 times. The global production rate increased by just a double, you know. So to go from price analysis to production is kind of uncertain. So the point of the real price going up, and I'll cite Mother Nature on this one, is I look back on this so many times when you had the real price of gold going up in a post-bubble deflation, and the gold stocks moving very well, and the production increasing. So if you look on the other side of the financial equation, in a financial mania, you've had a huge expansion of the usual credit instruments, you know, bonds and debentures and all that stuff. And then, of course, on each financial mania, you've had the innovative financial instruments like CODCs and all these weird things.
Yeah.
So then in a post-bubble contraction, the credit side contracts something bloody awful. And as we're, the next leg of this is about to start. So the way Mother Nature runs it is she raises the real price of gold. Production rates go up. The gold flows into the banking system. It doesn't matter whether the central banks hate gold or not. The reason for the rise is to increase production.
Mm-hmm.
And then it flows into the banking system, starts to liquefy it as all of the normal instruments of credit contract. And, of course, all the fanciful stuff just gets blown right out of the water. So this, and when you've read about them in the past, have been very exciting times for gold producers. And I think this should become more obvious later on in next year. And then the other problem that makes it a little frustrating is that if you're getting a very strong selling in the big stock market, there's no way the gold stocks can go up. So
right.
You have to have the real price of gold going up. You have to have earnings improving for the industry, and you have to have a neutral New York Stock Exchange market, and then you can get big moves for the gold shares. It can come back again.
Mm-hmm. So the dollar, what about the recent development, Bob, probably familiar with, I'm sure, of the renminbi now being made part of the SDR. What do you think the short-term ramifications are and the long-term?
I'm just going to wish him a lot of luck. It's market forces determine which will be the senior currency. For a long time, it was the sterling until, let's say, the 1940s. And then coming out of World War II, the senior currency has been the U.S. dollar. That the Chinese currency would become a reserve currency, in my mind, is quite doubtful. And it's also not in a responsibility of government to determine which is the reserve currency, or for that matter, to determine which is the world's financial center. And that then has always been a voluntary thing. At one time it was Rome, way back, and then it was Genoa and Florence. And then when the great amounts of silver were discovered in the Harz Mountains in the 1400s, then it shifted to Augsburg. And then when the port facilities in the Netherlands, Bruges and places like that, the world's financial center shifted to Bruges, harbor sealed it up. Then it was to Antwerp and then finally to Amsterdam. Then in the early 1700s, it shifted over to London. So this is all very voluntary. And the notion to do more settlements and reserve stuff in the Chinese currency is committees at work, and I don't think it'll work. I think until something really weird happens, the U.S. dollar is the senior currency.
Mm-hmm. So that's it, huh?
Yeah. Now, more short-term work here. As I said, the U.S. dollar, the run in the U.S. dollar index recently has driven it up. It's eligible for a correction at the same time as you got COT numbers for gold looking good. So we can get a brief rally here in the U.S. dollar. But for investors, we would, also recently we advised that one investors and traders could both accumulate some gold shares, you know, at on weaker days, and but not a full position. And so this would, I think we can get a bit of a pop and a trade out to here. And we could only, like in the sector on gold, for example, you should own some as insurance and never look at the price, and then traders should be trading it from oversold recently to the next overbought. But the idea of holding gold and sometime in a few years from now it's going to be worth $10,000, that is complete. That's opinion, and that's unsupportable by anything in history when you're dealing with the world's senior currency.
Yeah, well, it's wishful thinking, but there is a potential for some appreciation, though, isn't there?
Yeah. Now, on the bigger markets here, they're all talking about the Fed raising interest rates, and trust me on this one, the Fed is merely along for the ride. When you're on the business cycle, and while the Fed has obviously been able to push short rates down, and it assisted in pushing long rates down. But when you're at the end of a credit expansion, you have narrowing credit spread, which the market decides about narrowing, which is the difference between low-grade credits and high-grade credits. Well, that ended in June 2014. And also, that was the top of the junk bond market and the lowest interest rate. So if you look at junk interest rates, they've been rising since June 2014. And you have on long-dated treasuries, they've been rising since the first of the year. But then if you look at previous bubbles and the senior central bank, they're usually 3 to 4 months behind major changes in market rates of interest. And you now have had market rates of interest rising for some time. And the pressure on the Fed has been immense. They don't know what they're doing. So who knows, they may do a token increase in the Fed funds level, but it doesn't matter. It's all in the market anyway. There's no point discussing it because they're usually behind market rates of interest, which have been going up anyway. So there's a considerable risk in bond markets. In the long-dated treasuries, there's risk in term. And in low-grade stuff, they're just plain credit risk. And we've been out of the treasury market since January, and we've been out of any low-grade stuff since the middle of 2014, and have absolutely no urge to go back in. There'd be some trades from time to time, but that's for bond desks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Bob, it's always interesting speaking with you, getting a historical perspective. And most importantly, you've been spot on about the dollar, pretty close on gold and silver. And I guess we're just going to have to see what happens. But yeah, I don't see a rush into renminbi at this point. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with Bob, where's the best place to get you?
Oh, yeah. Website, institutionaladvisors.com, or something I found a little while ago which amazed me. Just Google Bob Ahoy, B-O-B-H-O-Y-E, and bang, you all the stuff right there. Very pleased to have inquiries, and we start off with just mailing out what we get, emailing it out on for 4 or 5 weeks, and if you like the service, we work out a fee. If you don't, that's fine too. So,
all right, we will talk to you soon.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.